Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and the end of Oak Street, more like the beginning of a good movie. Joining me today is Devinder Hardawar.
If you love a split diopter shot, have I got the movie for you.
And Jeff Cannata.
Welcome to Jurassic Block.
Those are all vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be reviewing The End of Oak Street. Before we get to that, of course, on today's podcast, we got some what we've been watching and some film news to discuss, some of it quite sad. But before even any of that, I do want to make one announcement. The Summer Movie Wager is coming to a close. Huge shout out to Dennis, who runs the summermoviewager.com, where you can monitor the progress all summer. And as people know, the reward for winning the Summer Movie Wager is you get to dictate a piece of media under 3 hours long that everyone else on the wager needs to watch. Well, last year, Peter Cerretta won the wager, and his choice was Penn and Teller Get Killed. And that is going to be the After Dark review for this week. So this week's After Dark, we will be reviewing that movie, Penn and Teller Get Killed. And that will be made available for everyone. So just wanted people to know that that is right under the wire. We're fulfilling the promise of last year's wager. And yeah, people can look forward to that review. So I'm curious to hear. I've not seen it yet as of this recording. I can only imagine that Peter has chosen an excellent movie for us all to watch. So I think it's going to be smooth sailing.
He doesn't like to torture us at all.
No,
ever.
No. Yeah. I can't imagine this movie being of low quality in any regard. Anyway, so that is what's going on with the wager. But yes, very exciting. We're coming in on the end of the wager, and we will be recording our results episode very soon, hopefully. Before we get to what is going on with the rest of the podcast, I do just want to mention we heard some very sad news Sunday night. Hayden Panettiere has passed away at the age of 36.
And 36. Whew,
so I was stunned when I saw this because she was so young. I really appreciated her in films like Scream 4 and 6. I also remember the Titans. Devendra, I think you watched Heroes, right? Were you a fan of her in that show?
She was incredible in Heroes. Like, she was a breath of fresh air. She always had this great spunky energy. I feel like she brought that energy to anything she's in. She also did voice work in the Kingdom Hearts game, so a whole generation of people know her voice from there. This is terribly sad. I saw the news immediately before I went to bed last night. I was just like, man, it really does suck because she was something special. And I don't know. We don't know the full extent of like what went down here, but I know she was struggling with things recently, and I'm just sad to see this story. Yeah.
Yeah, if you know about her backstory, it is very sad and tragic, some of the things that she's had to go through in her life. Jeff, I don't know if you had any thoughts on Hayden Panettiere.
Of course, yeah. I mean, save the cheerleader, save the world, right? People don't remember what a big deal Heroes was.
Yeah.
Because superheroes are everything now, are everywhere all the time. There wasn't anything like that when Heroes came out. Heroes was like, hey, mainstream.
Right.
Want to try some superpower stuff?
NBC, and, you know?
Smallville, there were like other attempts, but this was like...
It was like a big hit about people with superpowers. And it was like, the comic book world is infringing on mainstream for the first time. And it was like, wow, this is really... kind of like somebody who writes this gets it. Somebody who writes it understands what's cool about comics. And it was a huge deal at the time. And she was a big, big part of that. I mean, she was, you know, save the cheerleader, save the world. She was the cheerleader. So it's very, very, very sad. Anybody passing away at such a young age is incredibly tragic. And, it felt like she was kind of more involved in the Scream franchise, and she was doing Until Dawn, the video game franchise, like, you know, working. And it's just very sad.
Well, I hope whatever she was going through that she is finally at peace. It's time to move on. There's never a really good way to make these transitions, but before we get to what we've been watching this week, I did want to talk a little bit about some of the major news that was announced this week. D23. Disney has now basically, they're like, we don't need Comic-Con anymore. We have our own Comic-Con. We're going to make our own one that has only Disney things. Ton of announcements this week, but the biggest one is the cast of the new X-Men. Now, I guess talking about this might result in spoilers for Spider-Man Brand New Day. So in the unlikely event that you have not seen that film and still care about spoilers, you should know that we will probably be spoiling that. So all this said, Devendra, I couldn't help but think of you when the X-Men cast was revealed, because it's literally like everything that Devendra wants. Yes. In movies.
It's happening.
In movies was like encapsulated in this announcement, right?
With people I love. Good stuff. Amazing stuff.
Reading here from Hollywood Reporter, Sadie Sink will play Jean Grey, and apparently mm-hmm. the movies will be centered on her, which is something we had speculated, right? Like this, mm-hmm. it will be about her, so that's really interesting. Kit Connor, Cyclops, Christopher Abbott.
Hell yeah.
Playing Professor X.
We have been championing Christopher Abbott for years. I feel like this guy is going places. I saw him more as like one of the, I guess one of the younger people with powers, but he's aging. We're all aging. And I could see him being a pretty kick-ass Professor X.
Yeah, like, pretty young Professor X. Also, an American Professor X, which we haven't had
true.
In a while. So
he's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. A wonderful actor. Really curious to see what the take is going to be. Maya Boyd is going to play Storm.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Driver cast as Mr. Sinister. Now,
it feels like a wasted casting for, I feel like he could have been maybe a more mainstay role, but Sinister is good. He's got the face for it.
Well, I think we're going to be a long way until we get to Mr. Sinister. I think he's going to be Essex or Nathaniel Milbury. He'll be that character, mm-hmm. I think, long before. It feels like building blocks toward something down the road. I doubt we're going to see him in full Mr. Sinister mode in anytime soon. That's just my instinct.
I'm gonna guess the opposite. I'm gonna guess that he's gonna be in one movie, because this is something Marvel likes doing. They like bringing in one of these like very high profile actors for one movie as like a villainous type character. Think of like Mads Mikkelsen or Tony Leung, or you know, all these big actors, James Spader, although he's gonna be in Vision Quest, you know, like all these big actors coming for like one movie. They do the villain hit and then they're out.
It could be, because I don't think Adam Driver is gonna be like, yes, I want to commit another 10 years of my life to a franchise where I don't know, you know, where things are going to go by the end of the time.
Possibly. My instinct here is that they announced the X-Men, and they weren't announcing mm-hmm. the X-Men's, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if you have Emma Frost and Nathaniel Essex / Milbury, you know, traditionally those were villain characters that were walking the line. So I don't know. That's my instinct.
I also got to put this out there. The internet is ablaze with rumors about Adam Driver's involvement in the Star Wars franchise. Specifically when he made the announcement, Adam Driver filmed the announcement at D23 from Pinewood Studios, which people were like, why would Adam Driver have be at Pinewood Studios? Like, what's the necessity?
That would be a pretty baller surprise if they could keep that under wraps and just be like, hey, this is actually happening.
Well,
like,
I would say there's a lot of kind of like clues being dropped that maybe they're working on something. And specifically, a lot of people are wondering if that's the hunt for Ben Solo, right? And I don't know that movie will happen in the way that it was supposed to happen, but maybe it will happen in some form.
Give Soderbergh a weekend. He can make that movie. Give him a weekend and an iPhone.
Yeah. Also, give him an iPhone 13. He can make a movie.
Yeah.
Also, Pinewood Studios is used for lots of different movies.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. But you have to imagine, Jeff, that these are extremely highly controlled announcements, and they could have made it less obvious or done something different. Anyway, whatever the case, a lot of rumors about what's going on with
you left out the coolest one.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to get to that. Mm-hmm. Indy Navarrete playing Rogue.
Woo!
Hell yeah. Indy Navarrete from Obsession this year.
Just, you know, coming in, I was going to say coming in like a storm, but nope, coming in like a rogue. coming in hot on this Obsession buzz, you know, Obsession ruling the world. She is a massive star turn in that. in that movie? What do you do next? Signed to a Marvel movie, baby. Get that bag. But also, just very excited she's involved because what a talent. She's gonna. I'm so excited that she's involved. This is really cool.
And also, this is like Rogue was the introduction character in the Bryan Singer X-Men.
Right.
We start with her. We go through with her. The relationship between her and Wolverine is kind of like the centerpiece of that story. And they never recast Rogue, right? Like, so to follow up on Anna Paquin, that's kind of interesting. She is a fascinating actress, just like Anna Paquin was back in the time.
I predict it will be a very different Rogue than we saw.
Yeah. I mean, I thought she was phenomenal in Obsession.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta say, not sold on her as Rogue yet. You know, I don't
really. Well, Rogue in the comics is very much not what Anna Paquin was. Uh-huh. You know,
I know. I understand. Like, it's probably closer to the X-Men animated series, right? Portrayal, right? Yeah. And like, when I see Indy Navarrete, I don't see that character yet. But I'm totally willing to. You know, like, this is so early days, and I don't know what they what the audition process or recruitment process was like for this. Anyway.
Such an interesting grouping of
it is an interesting group
mutants.
It is interesting grouping. Also, to be clear, not all of them have been announced yet. There's some pretty prominent ones missing from this list, right? And they have said that they will reveal more later. But obviously, the big one that we are very curious about is Wolverine. And if you want to hear us talk about who might be a good Wolverine unsuccessfully, then you should listen to a recent After Dark at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
I don't think we're going to see Wolverine in the first movie.
That will be like the ending thing, lead to whoever that will be. Did they ever confirm? Like, I guess Channing Tatum was just doing it for Deadpool, right? For it to be Gambit. I thought there was word that he was doing something like legit.
There is, Devendra. I guess you haven't seen the latest Doomsday trailers.
Oh, yeah, Oh, yeah. So these are all different freaking universes and stuff, but it's weird that we got that outside of X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
So it's going to be Indy Navarrete Rogue, Channing Tatum Gambit as like a feisty couple. Could, eventually, maybe.
Unclear if Tatum will be in this version of the X-Men.
I
do not.
In fact, if I
had money, I would say that's not going to happen. You know,
it's like, super confusing to have notable X-Men characters in this whole other thing and then to have the X-Men movie without them. Yeah.
It's true, but I think I have to imagine that somehow Doomsday / Secret Wars is going to lead into or explain, hey, this is Earth 589 or whatever, and this is where these X-Men are compared to the X-Men that we're going to see in
Doomsday. How dare you make up numbers? 616
as if,
is
as
the
if they would make up.
Okay, sorry, Jeff. That's my bad. I was just pulling that out of my ass. Man, this is an exciting cast, I have to say, right?
X-Men will save Marvel.
And I do feel like this, to me, is more exciting than the Fantastic Four cast was when it was announced.
Anything in Doom, like, this is more exciting than Doomsday to me. Like, we've seen the teasers and the trailers, and I'm like, I don't know. There's nothing for me. And we got people coming back as villains, and this is interesting. Something potentially new, something potentially exciting, yeah.
What's cool is it feels like the heyday of Marvel when they just had their pick of whoever they wanted. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, who's your dream cast of these characters?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, in a dream world, Adam Driver. I don't know, Adam Driver. Mm-hmm. It's like, we can get him. It's like, you can get whoever you want.
But also, like, Adam Driver, you want to keep somebody around. Who's a good counterpart to Christopher Abbott's Professor X? Adam Driver would have been a great Magneto. So now who is that Magneto?
Well, I feel
interesting,
like,
things to think about.
I think one of the indicators here is that they're not going Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Magneto isn't, or
hasn't been announced.
Eventually,
yet,
you know, eventually.
Like, you think it's like not in this movie? I think just hasn't been announced yet. That's my guess.
I would be willing to put a little money on that.
You gotta have that.
Let's put some money on. We got some three bets here. Like, I'm saying, Adam Driver one movie. You know, Wolverine and Magneto yet to be revealed. You're saying...
I say Wolverine and Magneto are not in this first movie at all.
Uh-huh.
Period.
Wow. Oh, that's rough.
Okay. And then Adam Driver in Mr. Sinister we won't see for at least two movies, you're saying.
No, right? I don't know about that. No. I think
you said not
saying he's going to build up the character.
Or he's not going to be, you know, the villain.
I don't think you're going to see him with a red diamond on his chest and his forehead. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to... It's not going to be full Mr. Sinister.
Questions out there. Who is a good Magneto for this mix? Because now you're adding ingredients to the soup, right?
Yeah.
What you gonna make here? Yeah.
All right. I don't know if we're putting money on this, Jeff, but this is, you know, this is the bet so far. Adam Driver, Red Diamond, full blown Mr. Sinister get up in the first movie. That's me. And he's gone by the second movie. And and also Magneto, Wolverine, at least one of those, I think, will be announced before.
At least one of those.
At least one.
That seems like hedging.
Okay, fine. No. Yeah, I'm hedging. I'm hedging, Jeff. That's what I'm doing. I'm owning it. All right. Anyway, very exciting. And maybe the Marvel Universe has some life in it left. So we will find out. We're going to take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more and what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Cachava. I have loved all their flavors. Big fan of the strawberry in particular. But guess what? There's a new flavor that is just like a time machine. A nostalgia rocket ship that takes you back to my childhood. Watching those Saturday morning cartoons. And guess what came on? Ooh, the cereal ads. What did I want to have? Oh, I wanted to have that cinnamon French toast cereal. That's what their new flavor is. Cinnamon French toast. Are you kidding me? You can get whole body nutrition in the flavor of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. It still packs all those things you need, all the nutrition your body craves, with protein, fiber, greens, and so much more. This is made with real cinnamon bark for the richest, deepest, most authentic flavor. Because Cachava is committed to providing clean nutrition to fuel your day wherever it takes you. No fillers, no nonsense, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners, non-GMO, no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. Treat yourself to a childhood favorite. Go to cachava.com and use our code FILMCAST for 15% off your first order. That's Cachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com. With the code FILMCAST, Cachava.com, code FILMCAST for 15% off.
All right, folks, let's get to what we've been watching. This week, a few of us have watched some of the same films. I don't know if you guys know this, 16 movies came out into theaters this past weekend.
A lot,
The way that this summer season has been organized has been unhinged. Like, there is no reason to spread the movies out like this, where it's completely backloaded towards the end of August. I mean, there's a new Ridley Scott movie coming out in 2 weeks. You know, like
which I also didn't know existed until after the summer started. I feel like End of Oak Street deserved earlier in the summer.
Oh, absolutely.
It could have had some legs. Yeah.
They stacked all these movies at the end of summer. By the way, these are movies that need more time in theaters to really find their audience, and they're going to be like gone. 2 weeks, they're going to be gone for some.
People love dinosaurs in the summer. What are you doing?
I don't know what they're doing. Anyway, all that said, we had a chance to watch this movie called It Ends this week. It Ends is going to be out in theaters this coming up weekend. So we will not spoil the movie, but we all had a chance to watch it. It premiered at South by Southwest.
It was on like Fandango's like
streaming
service.
It was on the Letterboxd rental service.
Yes.
Earlier this year when South by Southwest premiered. When it premiered at South by Southwest. Premiered at South by Southwest in 2025.
Yes.
And then was released in Letterboxd in December 2025.
Yep.
Now it's finally out in theaters. It's going to be the third film this year that I can recall to deal with people getting lost in liminal spaces that cannot escape them. Specifically thinking of Backrooms and Exit 8.
And all of those made by young filmmakers.
Yeah. Maybe says something about our current time.
I wonder if there's something about all these movies about being trapped in liminal spaces, unable to escape and having these nightmarish experiences that like might be common to what's going on in this collective psyche right now. Anyway, this movie, It Ends, is about four friends who end up driving down a forest road and essentially find themselves unable to escape from it. Every now and then they're beset upon by these terrifying other humans that are in this space, and they need to find a way to survive and adapt to their new situation. I want to start by just saying that out of those three movies I just named, this is my favorite one. Exit 8, I think, beats this movie in terms of like the production design and like how
there's
striking the visuals are.
Yeah.
But this one is the one that made me feel like, wow, this is really saying something about liminal spaces and life. I thought the chemistry between the actors was pretty solid. And overall, I just think this movie's left me feeling stuff and thinking about stuff. I'm not going to go too much into it because we're not going to spoil it. But like, I left this movie feeling like, wow, that was a somewhat profound experience and pretty well done. Devinder Hardwar, what did you think of It Ends?
Oh, yeah, I adored this movie as well. I still think Exit 8 is like the one that still tops for me, just in terms of like visual inventiveness and kind of what they were doing. But they're all speaking to greater themes. And I think this movie does a lot with very little. I'm sure I feel like any young filmmaker, right? You're setting up your first movie or one of your first movies. You're not going to be doing something on like a gigantic boat, right? You're not going to do a big action epic. Four people in a car on a forested highway, very easy to shoot. And I feel like that's something that's just like a big part of this movie. But they do a lot with very little. I think like the characters are great. I didn't initially think like this group of four people were actually friends. It didn't feel like they had that dynamic. I didn't really get that. But as the movie went on and they got more comfortable with each other, I kind of got that feeling too. Like it does feel like they know things about each other. They do actually like each other. So yeah, I really enjoyed this one. It's not one of those movies you go in where everything gets to be explained either, and I kind of prefer that. I don't need everything to be explained. It's fine. Let the mystery linger.
Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on It Ends?
You know how I know this was made by a young filmmaker? It's because they describe a horrific experience that would be the best possible thing for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're on an endless road trip with your favorite people. That's just something I don't get to do ever again. I will never do that again in my life. These kids get to be young forever,
yeah,
and hang out with the people they like the most on a road trip. You know how much I would love to go on a road trip with my best friends? Like, this is not a horror movie. This is a fantasy. This is the best possible outcome.
This is Jeff's Lord of the Rings.
I was like, what a wonderful experience this must be for all. Yeah, I did not love this movie, but I agree with Dave that it's my favorite of the three liminal space movies of 2026. But again, for me, low bar because I didn't really care for either of the other ones either. But I do think this is an impressively economic film. Like it's impressively, like you guys have pointed out, it's impressive how much is made with so little. And I think there are some there are some lovely things. I think the metaphor is just like sledgehammeringly on the nose, you know, and it's a lovely idea. I was thinking as I was watching it, like, you know, how much I loved Clerks when it came out. And how much it spoke to me. Mm-hmm. And I could only imagine someone my age now watching Clerks when it came out, thinking how insufferable those people must have seemed to them.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's what these people were to you?
Yes.
And I
think that is, it's just a generational thing. It's like, this is speaking to a generational, you know, mental state that I don't share, right? And again, I'm looking at this going like, you don't realize how wonderful it is to just be able to hang out with your friends and be free and like just talk about stuff and like not have worries. And this movie is like, no, but all the worries. And it's like, you don't have any. So it's
the worry of being trapped on Infinite Road is kind of a big thing. I feel like that kind of devalues the fun of the vacation, right?
Well, sure. I understand the,
like, where are we? What's going on? This movie is very smart about the character. Just the list. Okay. What is this?
That's one thing I loved is I love this movie has characters that seem to have watched movies before.
Yeah. But they immediately leap to, you know, some places where it's like, is that the logical? Okay. It's fine. Sure. It's fine. Again, I think this movie is impressive as a first effort. And I think I particularly liked Phineas Yoon. I think he's great. But, you know, everybody just mumbles their way through this movie. I don't want to poop on anybody's parade. I do think this is the best of the three sort of movies we're talking about right now. And it does, you know, speak to this sort of existential fear that is really, really real in a whole generation of young people that feel like they're just mm-hmm. on this, you know, this
road to nowhere.
Road to nowhere. Sure. Yeah. I was trying to come up with
it's a very universal thing too, right? Like it is very specific for this generation, but I had these feelings, right? I remember watching The Graduate for the first time, right? And that's a movie from where? Early 60s. And I saw that in college, like, oh, I relate to this. It's
well,
similar,
The Graduate is a much more sophisticated, interesting movie than this is. But I mean, I think there's an old joke that probably predates even my lifetime. It says, you know, life sucks and then you die. Which is basically the thesis of this movie, right? It's like, it's not, this movie isn't.
I disagree completely, but go ahead. Yep.
Well, this movie is basically, you know, you just got to keep going. Just got to keep going. And I think that that's something that this movie feels like it comes from a very immature point of view, which sort of like, I can understand. It's that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I just, which is why I was like, I'm, when I saw Clerks and was like, this is profound. And it's like, I'm sure a lot of people who are older were like, it ain't, you know, it ain't. So that's just my, I don't mean to be so cynical. I just felt like this movie is, it feels like it's making a point that is just glaringly obvious to, I think, people who've lived a little longer. That's all.
Wow. Disagree so strong. I don't even agree with you on what the main thesis of the movie is, you know, but I can't really talk about it without getting into spoilers. So I'm not going to right now, but I'll just say that in my opinion, the way this movie ends, like the end of it ends, it tells a much different story than what Jeff Cannata just indicated. But that's me. And, you know, I totally get being annoyed by these characters. Like if this is a sensibility and style of dialogue and talking that just may not be for you.
Well,
and
it's
totally legitimate, right?
Like, it speaks to like, what would you do in this situation, right? Like there are multiple characters. Would you give up early? When do you give up hope? Or do you push it all the way? And I feel like I really relate to Phineas Ian's character because I'm like, I'm going to listen. We're here. We've been doing this for a while. Let's keep going. Let's keep going and see where this leads. That's me.
And that's life, right? And that's life. Yeah. I think that's what the movie is. The point of the movie is like, that's life. That's what life is.
Well, I'm sorry Jeff didn't like it that much. Devendra and I, both huge fans. I think this is such a much better film than Back Rooms in terms
of agreed.
How much it realizes what it is attempting
it's
to
well
do.
Written. It's well written in a way Back Rooms is not.
Yeah, it's much better written script in my opinion. And I wish this was the movie that was going to make like $300 million, you know, like, but it's I don't think it's going to is my guess. However, if you have a chance, you should check it out. The movie's called It Ends and it's out in theaters this weekend.
Yeah, Alex Olam definitely has a really interesting career ahead of him.
Agreed. Devendra Hardwar.
Yes.
You and I had a chance to watch a movie by Kiyoshi Kurosawa, right?
Kiyoshi, yeah.
Yeah, no relation to Akira. Yep. But this movie called The Samurai and the Prisoner, it's out in limited release right now. And what did you think of this movie, Devendra?
This is a really interesting one. I think I like this movie a lot better than his last major release, which was Cloud, which was kind of a really interesting like action thriller based on an eBay reseller. That movie is kind of
about
wild.
Drop Dave, shipping.
Yeah, Dave, have you seen that movie yet?
I started watching it and didn't finish it. I meant to go back to finish
it. Yeah, I feel like it will speak to you in some ways, but people praise that.
But yeah,
people praise that, and I think like it was just kind of messy. But this movie is more of a focused. It's called The Samurai and the Prisoner. There's not much action in this. This is a very kind of talky movie about a samurai who is thinking about basically going against his lord and dealing with the consequences of that. And I found it really fascinating, right? Because it's ultimately somebody trying to reject the world around them, the tradition around them, and how difficult that is. People are like, well, you got this prisoner here. You got to kill him. That's the only honorable thing to do. You got to kill him. And he's like, I'm tired of killing people. Can we just stop with the killing people? And it's really strange that he wants to not kill everybody. So it is that tension of somebody who is going through life, who has gone through things, right, and dealing with a system that is inherently punishing, and the only way to really retain your honor is through death. it's somebody rejecting that system. And I found that exploration really fascinating. This movie is also at times kind of a murder mystery, which is kind of cool too.
I would describe it as a series of whodunits. The movie's two and a half hours long.
Yeah.
And it's a series of whodunits set in the samurai world that ultimately I think are quite interesting when taken together.
Whodunit? Maybe the guy with the sword?
Oh, Jeff. You jest, Jeff, but there are things. It goes places.
I think it's about, can you be a guy who doesn't want to kill
in a
world that's a kill everyone world, basically. Yeah. Like,
killing is good.
Dying and killing, you know, because of honor. Those are all good things, but you're like but what if we didn't kill people?
Like, what if I really like tea and I don't like killing people?
I just want to drink some tea and not kill people. Is that okay in this world? And
one of the best representations of like the tea ceremony process, by the way, which is a lovely thing where people whisk the matcha and everything. This movie just, amidst all of everything, the murder, the swords, everything, you sit and watch a guy make matcha for 3 or 4 minutes. It's pretty cool how it does this. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool, interesting movie, I would say. I would recommend it if you're into like procedurals, if you're into samurai period era films. Pretty methodical movie, right? And it is quite a long movie as well, so you got to strap in. But I would say it's worth the time investment. So those are my thoughts and Devendra's thoughts on The Samurai and the Prisoner. You'd recommend this, right? Sounds like
I would recommend it. Do you like Poirot films? Do you want a samurai Poirot film? Yeah, there you go.
Poirot. Kind of like murder mystery stuff, but with some like broader themes. And it's like, it's a thing where, hey, it's a historical drama, and but really, how historical is it? Because maybe we're dealing with the same issues today in some way. Yeah.
And these characters actually existed. The actual plot line didn't happen, but it is based on people who existed at that time.
The Samurai and the Prisoner is available right now in limited release. Let's take another break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more of what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Quince. Hey, fall is right around the corner, and August is the perfect time to hit the reset button before the autumn rush begins. Hey, I can't think of a better place to start than my own closet. That's why I love shopping at Quince. Quince specializes in everyday staples that work harder, like their ultra-soft organic cotton tees and their premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters. I got me one of those sweaters. Ooh, I like it. Can't wait for fall to put that baby on. They're versatile, timeless, and transition seamlessly from a casual workday to a nice dinner out. And if you're still hanging on to the same worn-out basics, Quince makes it easy to upgrade. They have premium denim and tailored chinos from just $60 with the kind of perfect fit, structure, and high-quality fabrics that you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen. So you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. I love all my Quince apparel. I got that sweater I was telling you about. I do have a couple t-shirts, some shorts. My wife's always commenting when I put them on. She says I look snazzy. Not her words, mine. But you know, I can see the twinkle in her eye. And it's not just the clothing. Quince is a go-to for everything from hotel-quality bedding and bath essentials to premium cookware and travel must-haves. Wow! Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/filmcast. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's a whole year. Now available in Canada and the UK, too. That's quince.com/filmcast. Quince.com/filmcast.
Jeff Cannata, you and Devendra Hardwar had a chance to take in a new HBO original series. What was that?
Just the first episode of Lanterns, the new DC Universe movie about the Green Lantern Corps.
TV show, we should say.
Sorry, I said movie. Yeah, you're right. TV show. Series on HBO Max. The one to watch for HBO Max. And what a cast. What a cast. You know, guys, if you were to gun to my head and say you could only keep one actor on this planet, and it's either Kyle Chandler or Timothy Oliphant, I would just take the bullet.
Wow.
I can't. They're both my boys. My favorite guy. My favorite
boys. Does
this
question, though, imply that, like, your choosing them would then lead to the death of the other one?
Would lead to them not never having existed, Dave.
Oh, wow. Okay, profound. So you have that power then. It's
well,
really...
I'm telling the person with that power. Right. I get to decide how they choose to... You know, they're a Thanos-type character who can just eliminate someone from existence.
I need to eliminate half of the hottest, most talented male actors in the world.
Or
Kyle
just
Chandler and
guys.
Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is just my. I'm taking the bullet. Snap me out of existence.
That's
Thanos,
right. Instead. I'd rather not be here than sacrifice either one of my boys.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
Anyway, commitment.
What I would try to tell you is I love Kyle Chandler a lot.
I see. I get that.
And he's in this. Also, Aaron Pierre, who, you know, we saw Rebel Ridge. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I'd ever seen him really doing
now,
it.
No, we saw him in Old. He was mid-sized sedan.
Oh, you're right. He was mid-sized sedan in Old. Yeah. Good point. Didn't stand out for me in that movie.
His eyes certainly stood out there in his name.
Yeah. But hey, when I saw Rebel Ridge, I was like, this dude's a star. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to play a superhero at some point. Like, look at this dude. He is a superhero. And of course, the perfect Jon Stewart. So like these two dudes together, awesome. It's a buddy cop show.
Buddy galactic cop show.
That's right. And the great thing about this is, as Hal Jordan, Kyle Chandler is just a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. Piece of shit. And what a fun thing to see Kyle Chandler, who's like, decency personified, you know, like, you know, as you know, the in Friday Night Lights, Coach Taylor, it's like the ne plus ultra, you know, of just what I yearn to be, just a decent good man.
But here's the thing, Jeff, like he's not a Hank Hill, right? Coach Taylor was not a Hank Hill. He's not like, I love barbecue, I love him on one thing. He's a bit of a rascal.
And I
this
guess.
Is Kyle Chandler. Full on rascal mode. And
oh,
it's kinda,
it's delightful
glorious
to see, though, man. Yeah. He gets to choose scenery and just be a jerk, and it's great. Again, only one episode in. I love this show already. I think this first episode rips. It goes places. It's fun. It's the banter is great. The thing that's crazy about this show is that it's just a prestige TV kind of procedural thing, but also superheroes. Like, it's not a superhero show. It's a show like you would find on HBO Max that just happens to also have all these sci-fi fantasy elements to it.
I mean, Damon Lindelof has a hand in this, and like, there's a lot of Watchmen in here and sort of like rethinking how we think of superheroes. Yeah.
But it boggles my. Also, it's hard R, right? Mm-hmm. Jon Stewart, episode one, banging a chick. Lots of F-bombs. You know, it's like the idea that this is part of the building blocks of the DC universe is crazy to me, because like, what are we doing? I don't know. Like, ostensibly, what's his name?
Fillion.
Fillion's gonna show
Fillion's
up
in this universe.
Yes,
yeah.
It's the same guy, and it's like, this is like the wholesome Superman, Supergirl, same world, but we got hard R. It makes no sense to me, but I'm very much enjoying the show, and I can't wait to see where it goes. But it's like the Penguin. If you liked The Penguin, which was like basically a crime show, like a full-on prestige television crime show that just happened to be set in a superhero universe, that's this. This is a prestige television like Justified or, you know, The Shield or something like that. But also there's a guy who can fly in it. You know, it's like
occasionally he barely flies.
Rarely. Yes. Yeah. But he can manifest things out of thin air. You know, and there's some like wild sci-fi ideas right in episode one that are awesome. There's this killer interrogation sequence that I just love. Mm-hmm. Like, I was in it by the end of the show, episode one. I thought the pilot ripped. And I'm curious what you thought, Devendra.
Yeah, it's a great first episode. Like, this is everything I loved. I didn't even realize Lindelof had a hand in this, but he's doing this thing. I think we talked about it around Mrs. Davis as well, like where he sort of like helps lead a new showrunner or a new writer to like co-do a show, basically. Like, he's taking a step back and he's just like giving guidance. And this show absolutely rips. Like, it is ultimately a two-hander, but everybody else around them, Garrett Dillahunt appears at some point. Good. I'm just like, I love Garrett Dillahunt.
Jason Ritter? Jason Ritter.
Love a Jason Ritter. Love a Purna Jagannathan from Delhi Boys.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah, everybody here is so good. It's so well written. And it's like, it does feel like a counterintuitive superhero story, right? Like, we've seen Peacemaker. Peacemaker is an R-rated thing within the DC universe, but this is also more prestige. Like, Peacemaker is very much action comedy type of deal that's also rated R. This is slow, steady, really character centric. It's only one episode, but I cannot wait to see where the rest of this goes.
Totally agree. Yeah.
I've heard great things. I cannot wait to check this out. Definitely on my planning to watch it today. So I'm excited to check out Lantern.
So we've got a Superman movie. We got a Supergirl movie that didn't do too well. We got this, we got Peacemaker, and we're getting like a Clayface, like hard R horror movie. Like, what? Yeah. I kind of love it that we just don't care and we're just making good stuff, or as good a stuff as we can make. Yes, thumbs up, go for it. But to talk about it as like a cohesive universe,
right?
You know, to have Guy Gardner from the Superman movie show up, and it just kind of, I mean, understand the overarching philosophy here, but I also kind of love it.
You haven't even brought up the fact that there was the Peacemaker thing, which is, in my opinion, Peacemaker season 2 was overall bad. Like, there were some nice moments in it, but season 1 was great. Season 2 was bad. It felt like James Gunn was overextending himself. So like, and then it kind of, there's no plans for Peacemaker season 3. So that storyline is basically just going nowhere. And then there's this whole other matter of this Batman that is extremely successful that James Gunn was not responsible for, right?
And that keeps getting pushed back later and later and later.
Right. By the time it's made, who knows? The new X-Men will be out by then. So it's even messier than you're saying, Jeff. And it's already quite messy what you're saying. So it's like, yeah. But, you know, Jeff, I seem to recall in a recent episode you basically saying, you know what? James Gunn's strategy is just make a good thing no matter what. And that's
Again, I said that just now, and I double thumbs up from me on that philosophy. I don't understand the rhetoric around making it a cohesive universe. Like, just say, like, we're going to make the best stuff we can make and let the chips fall where they may. Who cares? But that's not what's being said. What's being said is, no, everything fits together. It's just, you got to be over 18 to enjoy a lot of it. You know, it's very strange.
I think also just in general, the DC universe is not going to plan. There was a recent story, I don't know if you guys saw, about like several DC shows have died that were supposed to come into existence. And so I just don't know that. I remember when like James Gunn did his whole presentation and like laid it out, like, this is the plan for the DC universe. And it's easier to announce a universe than it is to build one. The shows I'm specifically referring to are Waller. There's a show like Amanda Waller based show that is now dead. Paradise Lost is a show that's now dead. Obviously Peacemaker, I've already said.
Raven there the Bold, wasn't that supposed to be a thing?
Yeah.
Right. I don't think that was a show, though, was it? Maybe it was. Anyway, been a long time since I've heard any news about that one, is what I'll say about that. So,
but here's the thing. Better to announce things and then have them die on the vine before production rather than to release absolute pieces of shit. You know, I was talking with a friend.
Is there a third option?
Is there a third option? You plan and you make decisions not to produce garbage, right? I was just talking with a friend. Secret Invasion. We all love Secret Invasion, right? We all remember everything that happened in Secret Invasion. That show costs as much as the Odyssey to produce. You know, and like maybe
just as good.
Just as good, just as memorable.
That show was seriously one of the worst pieces of shit I've ever seen in my life.
Absolute garbage. But I don't know why it cost nearly $210 million, but there you go.
So I mean, well,
cancel shows. Cancel shows all the time. Please, I mean, if you think it's bad.
You've seen what Marvel's strategy is now, right? Mm-hmm. It seems as though Marvel is basically not going to be making TV shows anymore. That's kind of
fine.
There were no announcements at D23 for anything that's like not currently already in production. Mm-hmm. Wonder Man recently canceled as well. And as far as we understand, that wasn't Feige's decision, right? It was probably something higher up. I think like there's going to be very, very few live action Marvel shows moving forward. So,
but it's
going to be all movies. It's going to be all movies. And that's fine. I think that's fine. But
the bad shows were so bad, they tainted something like Wonder Man, right? If Wonder Man had come out before the failure of like the Captain America show and Secret Invasion, like if it could be its own thing, it would have had time to flourish. By now, people are sick and tired of all of it. So James Gunn looking at these things they pitched and be like, you know, maybe we don't need the Amanda Waller show. Fine. Good. That's how decision making works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this Lanterns show is a wild thing, though, because It is a show that at once like does not need any comic book tie-in at all to work. Right. And at the same time, absolutely requires you to understand the dynamics of how a Green Lantern works. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't explain a Green Lantern at any point.
It doesn't say like, you know, there's no like voiceover. Long ago, there were these lanterns.
Well, there's an intro thing.
The
intro early on is just like, hey, we thought we were alone. Then we didn't. Here's Earth's first superhero. That's all you get.
Wow.
And then they never explain what like anything about.
But like there's like random things that are brought up that I guess just fly over someone's head if they don't. Like there's at one point he's like, hey, did you charge your ring with the lantern? It's like, wait, what?
You know,
like,
never set that up. Yeah. You know,
If you don't know anything about the Green Lantern Corps,
why do you know the rules? Yeah. Yeah. Why do you know my charging schedule?
It goes back to what you said about James Gunn's Superman, right? Which is, this is our first postmodern superhero film where, hey, we can just assume, I guess, you know, for Superman, it's like, we can just assume you know the Superman origin story. And I guess they applied that to the Green Lanterns as well.
They did. So, yeah, they 100% did.
Hopefully that doesn't backfire on them in any way. Go ahead.
He's like, you were chosen by those blue guys, right? And he's like, yeah, you know, the Guardians of the Universe. It's like, okay. And just imagine tuning in like you're tuning into, you know, The Sopranos, or you know, like you're tuning into the next HBO Max show, and it's like, whoa, it's like serious sci-fi concepts that are just.
My sense is you really like the show, but you're also worried that it seems to be made for an audience of just you.
That's exactly perfectly said. Perfectly said. I mean, I think Devendra and I are like the only people that are gonna go gaga for this show because maybe that's just a more common thing now because everybody's inundated with superheroes and they don't mind that stuff,
right?
But I'm just old enough, I guess, to remember when Heroes was a show where it's like, hey, we got to slow it way down.
We're going to ease you into this.
Be real. Let's explain everything because I know you guys are scared of these notions.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. What a time to be alive. Anyway.
What a time to be alive.
All right. That's Lanterns. It's available right now on HBO Max. Devendra and Jeff are huge fans. I'm planning to check it out today. I'm sure I'll be a fan as well. And that's something Jeff Cannata and Devendra have been watching this week. Let's take one last break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this. I had a chance to watch Jackass Best and Last. Jackass Best and Last.
I feel like you already talked about this. Did you already talk about this?
No.
Okay.
That was the last Jackass movie.
I mean, it could be.
That was the last Jackass movie.
There was a movie called Jackass Forever that came out a couple years ago. But because Paramount had a commitment to release X number of movies in theaters this year, they decided, let's package up a bunch of old Jackass footage with some new Jackass footage and make that into a movie that gets a major theatrical release. Now, to be fair, it has grossed over $27 million and cost way less than that. So I'm sure this movie will be a financial success for them. Okay, Jackass. My sense is you guys don't like Jackass that much. Is that kind of...
I've never seen a Jackass.
I like Jackass just fine. I'm not like a devotee like you are though, Dave.
I'm a devotee.
Yeah.
I mean, let me just say that, Jeff, all the stuff that you love about wrestling, I'm going to say some of it applies to Jackass.
Sure.
Now, there is not the audience interaction, obviously, you know, but the... I think Jackass probably...
To me, again... I haven't watched a Jackass.
Yeah.
But hearing you say that makes me think you don't understand wrestling.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. But I think there is a, here are the components that I would say might overlap, right? Number one, the willingness to put life and limb in danger and jeopardy for the bit.
Entertainment.
For the sake of the bit, for the sake of entertainment.
Yeah.
And number two, a kind of cleverness and thrill of unpredictability of what these specifically engineered bits will be. Because it's, I think Jackass gets a little bit of a bad rap, but it's not just like, hey, guy getting hit in the groin with a football, right? It's like they kind of create these really unique scenarios that are maximally engineered to disgust and terrify.
But it's also maximally guy getting hit in the balls with a football.
That's right.
Right? Sure. Like it has
that spirit. You know,
it has the spirit of like the most lowbrow stuff, but they go real hard on it.
Here's what I'll say about Jackass Best and Last. If you've never seen Jackass before, this is a great way to enter the Jackass universe because they basically have packaged up a lot of like their best bits from over the years. And they're in this movie. So you get like a really full overview survey, I guess is the word, of the Jackass universe. It's like literally the best bits from all the TV show, from all the movies. They just replay them in their entirety, sometimes with a little extra footage added.
So it's a clip show.
Yeah, and there are like a couple of new bits. There's a couple of new stunts that they do in this movie. But I'll say for me, as a longtime devotee of Jackass, wasn't a huge fan of this because I felt like about half of the movie is stuff that I've already seen before, right?
That's very odd.
Other movies like Jackass Forever, it's like 99% of that movie is new, net new stunts. This is like half the movie felt like stuff that had already been seen before, or that I've already seen on YouTube, or that has literally been in the previous movies. Like they just take stuff from the previous movies and put them in this one. So it felt a little low effort to me. Having said that, these guys are extremely old and still doing what they're doing. And there's something kind of admirable about that, but also kind of moving about that of like, these are guys that have been subjecting their bodies and bones to getting completely annihilated for decades. And at the, you know, in this movie, they basically acknowledge this is it. Like, there's not going to be another one of these. We're too old to do this now. And there is something unique, I guess you could say, about watching these guys get old as you get old, right? And seeing like their bodies can no longer handle getting their balls smashed in with a mallet anymore.
You just look like down at your hand, you look at the mallet in it, and you realize I'm just like them.
you look in the mirror and you're like, I don't recognize that person's face who got smashed in the face with a mallet anymore. and you may have a profound experience. So anyway, Jeff, I would say if you ever have wanted to dip into the Jackass world, this is a great movie to do that. Cause it's like, it's literally just all the best bits from the show and the previous movies. And a kind of, I don't think it's a worthy send off for the Jackass franchise. I actually think Jackass Forever would have been great for that. Cause there are some really amazing moments in Jackass Forever. And this one, the bits are only pretty good. But if you have always wondered what is this Jackass thing? Why does David Chen like this Jackass thing? What's going on with that? I think Jackass Best and Last is a great way to get into it. So,
And also partially you had to be there, right? You had to be there in the 90s when this all started to really get the sense of like what it was. And
there's a bunch of footage from that show as well in this as well. So, so you can kind of get the appeal, the kind of gonzo appeal of a show and movie series like Jackass. I will miss this show, this movie series when it's gone. I think there is a lot of creativity to what they were able to accomplish here, even as it is one of the grossest things I've ever seen. So
it sounds like though there's a long legacy that has inspired a lot of YouTubers. I think there's,
absolutely for better
plenty
or worse
of that kind of content if you so choose.
Yeah. I mean, none of them really do it as well as the OGs, but, that's the way it is. Jackass Best and Last, available on video on demand right now. Jeff Kanata, I think you got one last thing for us today, right?
I do. I watched a new show on Netflix, animated show from Ricky Gervais called Alley Cats. I watched this entire series in one sitting.
Wow.
That is because,
wow.
That is because the episodes are 15 minutes long and there's only...
And there's five of them.
I think there's only five. I think there might only be...
There's six episodes.
Six episodes, yeah. So again, not a huge time commitment. And they just roll, you know, Netflix, it's hard to even stop it at a certain point. It's like a snowball rolling down a hill and the next one just starts. I very much enjoyed the show. It is, made me laugh a lot. This is, you know, if you're not, again, on the face of it, if you're not into Ricky Gervais, you're not going to like it. It's him, right? It's his sensibility. And it's him animated, which is not new either. He's done animated stuff. And it's that same kind of style where it's like, it's loosely written, but you can also hear the improvisation within it, where it's basically Ricky Gervais brought together a bunch of people he likes and they had a sort of a script, I think, but there was a lot of room to play around. And Diane Morgan is in this, you know, Kunk herself is awesome. And it's just a bunch of real Cockney people in, with real thick Cockney accents pretending to be cats. And you know, every Ricky Gervais joke, not his stand-up jokes. I mean, some of his stand-up jokes, but most of his like improv-y, you know, podcast-y jokes are the same format, which is, you know, somebody says, makes some observation about a thing that is kind of interesting, but like, you know, why do we do that? It doesn't make any sense that we do that. And then somebody else defends it and both people double down on their positions. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, that's the joke.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to think that's a very funny premise. I think that's a very funny format for a joke is like, you know, why do we pee standing up? It's this dumb thing, but you know, I'm just making something up, but you know, it just goes back and forth. Well, I wouldn't want to do it the other way. And then, you know, but here the conceit is it's cats. So like they're pretending to be cats, but also most of the time the cats are talking about how dumb humans are, right? So it's like, why do humans do that? Humans are dumb. And so it gets to be this sort of observational thing. And the dynamics are funny because the cats...
So it feels like improvised and then they like animated it after they recorded everything.
Yes. Yeah? Yes. I mean, I don't think it's completely improvised because I'll get to why in a second. But the dynamics are interesting because the individual cats have funny personalities. And in particular, the show is called Alley Cats. So it's all these like stray, mangy cats that live in the slums in, you know, in Britain. But there's also one of them that has a collar that is owned by someone, but also comes to hang out with them sometimes. And the funny dynamic is that one like is a house cat and gets treated nice and gets fed and gets pet. But they all think, they all make fun of like, oh, you ponce, you stinking ponce. You're going to get food. You're going to get food every day. And he's like, yes, it's quite nice, actually. I love it. He's like, no, you know, so that dynamic is really funny to me. The thing that's the written part. And I think the thing that is very Ricky Gervais as of, you know, the last 10, 15 years of his career, any show that you watch, Afterlife, there tends to be like these episodes are like 15 to 17 minutes long, which means there's like 13 minutes of what I just described, which is this very funny to my mind riff of, you know, goofballery. And then the last 2 minutes get real sentimental and sweet. And it's like every episode is that. It's like, you know, 13 minutes of wacky and then 2 minutes of just real heartfelt, real poignant, you know, kind of hit you in the feels. And it's sweet. And, you know, the show is obsessed with death as he is, you know, as, you know, I like Ricky Gervais just because he's, you know, a devout atheist as I am. He's obsessed with death from a very particular point of view. And a lot of his shows are about death. And I think Alley Cats in its own way is about death. And I think, you know, surprisingly sweet, surprisingly poignant. And I enjoyed it. Like I said, I watched the whole thing in one sitting. It's not a long, experience, but one that made me laugh quite a lot and also feel something. So that's Alley Cats on Netflix.
One of the great jokes of all time, by the way, in The Good Place was when I think Jamila Jamil talked about a series on the BBC. She says, it ran for 16 years on the BBC. They did nearly 30 episodes, which I think that will always stay relevant. Anyway, glad Alley Cats on Netflix is good. This sounds like I might check it out. I have to say, I have found, I used to love Ricky Gervais's stand-up comedy. I used to like literally rewatch it on a loop. And I've found his last few specials have been virtually unwatchable. Just in my opinion, he has gotten really up his own ass about how, you know, provocative he is and such. And, you know, do you want to cancel me? You know, and it's like, okay, let's.
Well, I think no you might like this because it's none of that.
Yeah,
right?
Good. Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm like, oh, maybe I can.
It's, you know, it's still calling people a see you next Tuesday every 5 seconds. You know, it's still very, in your face, but
without it, how daring his tweets are, which is like what most of his comedy is about these days.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alley Cats, looking forward to checking it out on Netflix. That's going to bring us to the end of what we've been watching this week. Let's do a few weekly plugs.
We're going to do weekly plugs. Plugs.
Weekly plugs, a part of show each week where we plug something else we've been making. Before we do any of that, though, I do have a question for you guys. Why can't you hear it when a pterodactyl goes to the bathroom? Why can't you hear it when the pterodactyl goes to the bathroom? That's a question to think about as we get into our review momentarily. But I want to give a shout out to decodingeverything.com, which you can subscribe to for free. Matt Goldberg recently published his review of Coyote versus Acme, which is a movie that I've been looking forward to. We're very doubtful as to whether that movie would ever be released instead of written off for tax reasons. And it will be out in theaters later this summer. Matt Goldberg had a chance to see it early and watched it and wrote a review for DecodingEverything.com. Also, Carolyn Cita wrote a review of The Wrong Girls, which she enjoyed for its shaggy stoner charms. Check it out all at DecodingEverything.com. Subscribe for free. Devendra Hardware, your weekly plug.
Yeah, check out my work at Engadget. I just reviewed the new Dell XPS 13, which was usually their premium ultra-portable, but now they're making it kind of cheaper to compete with the MacBook Neo. So kind of a mixed bag, but check out my review.
And Jeff Cannata.
Limericks. I sell them at cameo.com/Jeff Cannata. People seem to like them. You can read over 200 five-star reviews there of the folks that have ordered a limerick. I write them. Right for you, to your specifications for your occasion, any occasion. I do anniversaries, birthdays, just because, whatever you like, cameo.com/Jeff Cannata. I'll deliver it to you via video. It's all good. cameo.com/Jeff Cannata.
Want to throw a shout out for patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can sign up for ad-free episodes, early access episodes, and exclusive bonus episodes. Again, as a reminder, we'll be reviewing Penn and Teller Get Killed this week as part of our fulfillment of this year's, or last year's summer movie wager results.
As part of our contractual obligation.
That's right.
That's why.
That's essentially why. Correct.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Indeed. But yeah, check it out. Patreon.com/filmpodcast. Of course, we never want anyone to donate. If it in any way causes them financial hardship, you can always support us for free by leaving a star rating for us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to everyone who supports the show in some way. It really means a lot. It's time for our review of The End of Oak Street.
Anybody else see that weird light last night?
What weird light?
The wind was blowing all crazy. Starbuck was freaked out and barking.
Could have been lights from a helicopter.
Or a UFO. Aliens.
Shut up, Dad.
Because they're extinct!
Wow. That's great. Wow. That's way better than
because
doing the actual punchline.
Because they're extinct.
That's great. I love it. I love the swerve.
Yes.
The swerve.
You thought I was going to zig. I zagged instead.
I thought you were going to urinate, and you didn't.
Welcome to the Filmcast review of The End of Oak Street. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. The Platt family bands together to navigate their new surroundings after a cosmic event transports their suburban neighborhood to someplace unknown. Now, The End of Oak Street is directed by the same guy who did It Follows and Under the Silver Lake. I don't know about you guys. I liked one of those movies a lot more than the other one.
We've never talked about Under the Silver Lake, but it's
a
really
weird movie. I never saw Under the Silver Lake. I was very curious to see it, and I never got around to it.
You would have feelings about it, Jeff. It's a very L.A. movie. Yeah.
I did not enjoy that movie very much. David Robert Mitchell, very talented director nonetheless, and I was very curious to see what he would do with The End of Oak Street. Devinder Hardwar, what did you think of the movie?
I think this movie is an absolute blast. People love, it's not a spoiler because it's in the trailers and everything. This is a freaking dinosaur movie, and I think this is the best dinosaur movie we've gotten since the first Jurassic Park. It does such a great job of giving us those old Spielberg vibes. Even its setting is very much like early 80s stuff. It is ultimately centered around a family that may be in crisis. And hey, this greater crisis comes and brings them all back together. It's an old formula, but it's done really, really well here. I love the setup of it. I love the setup of these relationships and of the family itself. Anne Hathaway, once again, playing kind of like the thankless wife, right? Like the wife who's trying to get out of like a weird situation. She is tremendous here, but I just love like this movie builds itself up so well. Characters acting smart, doing very smart things amidst like an extraordinary situation. I freaking loved it. Like, I wish it was a little longer, honestly. Like, it's only an hour and 39 minutes. I feel like we could just spend some time in this world and maybe, like, build on those character interactions a bit. But for what it is a wild ride and a great, great use of, like, I don't know, dinosaurs amid human drama. It is such a... It shows us, like, how badly the Jurassic World movies did. I like one of them quite a bit, but... Like, overall, the first Colin Trevorrow Jurassic World did not get the power of humans versus dinosaurs, and this movie absolutely gets that.
I feel like we have summers that are dominated by single actors. So last year, mm-hmm. It was Pedro Pascal, right? He was in The Materialist, Fantastic Four, Eddington, and he was on TV in Last of Us. Mm-hmm. And this summer, it's Anne Hathaway. She's all over the screen. She is doing a great job in Devil Wears Prada 2 and Odyssey and now End of Oak Street, where she put on a powerhouse performance in this film, in my opinion. Jeff Cannata, mm-hmm. Curious to hear your thoughts on The End of Oak Street.
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts on The End of Oak Street are best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Let's hear it, Jeff.
In the 80s, big action had heart. But this throwback, my God, falls apart. What good's heart if you're dumb? Please, I'm begging someone in this film to just do something smart.
Wow.
Okay. I
thought you would love this movie, Jeff.
I really fact that second time this week, I am going to be the negative Nancy here. Mm-hmm. I don't like being the negative Nancy. I didn't like not liking It Ends as much as you guys. And now The End of Oak Street. But... there's a very specific moment where I turned on this movie hard and then retroactively hated everything that came before. I hate this movie with like an intensity that I will attempt to express.
That's wild.
And it is, I'm shocked that Devinder, you said that people act smart in this movie. I think at no point does anyone do anything smart.
It is. Okay. Well, you say your thing, Jeff, but I will go down like the things I did. I just seem very smart. And hey, some people do stupid things, but also maybe their age range will, you know, make that the thing why they do dumb things.
This movie has one interesting thing that happens and then it completely doesn't have the courage to stick with it. And it makes me extremely angry. I think the end of this movie is an abomination. We'll talk about that in spoilers. But even before that, like this is a movie about dinosaurs that doesn't care about dinosaurs. Like there's nothing about it's not interested in the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs could be anything. They could be any monster. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what they are. I do like the fact that we're actually seeing dinosaurs with feathers and fur and stuff. A more modern understanding of, you know, how, where we've gotten with our, you know, theories about how dinosaurs actually looked and behaved. This is actually kind of cool. It's not like, oh, we if we're going to do dinosaurs, we have to make them look like people expect. It's like, no, no, we're going to try to make it historically accurate. I thought that was cool. But other than that, like, it doesn't, like, the first Jurassic Park, there's this wonder and obsession about dinosaurs. It's like, why do kids love dinosaurs? Why is our culture obsessed with dinosaurs? The movie Jurassic Park attempts to kind of wrestle with that and honor that, frankly. This movie doesn't care about any of that. These are just monsters. They're just monsters. Doesn't matter.
They're very different movies, though, right? Jurassic Park was about dinosaur experts going to a dinosaur theme park. This is suburban family stumbles into dinosaur, right? Like, right. I feel like the setting, the sort of like removing them from safety, it is a very different thing where they don't even have time to be like, they do be like, wow, that's really cool. But also, they're trying to survive because they're out to kill them. Yeah.
What I'm saying is, from the movie's perspective, there's nothing about the dinosaurs that is special. There's nothing about it being dinosaurs rather than random monster that is interesting. Like, we establish a character at the beginning who's obsessed with Carl Sagan, and just so she can pontificate at the end or in the middle, whatever. But why not actually make the movie interested in its subject matter? It doesn't seem to be, in my opinion. Everything is arbitrary. All of the actions, again, I think are the almost the stupidest thing you could do at any step of the way, the adults and the kids. It's almost the stupidest thing you could possibly do in that situation. And my desire as a film goer, as a person who, consumes a narrative, I want to feel like the people that I'm watching are smarter than me. Like, wow, I would never have thought, what a cool thing, an amazing thing. Wow. Oh yes. Hey, let's show how plucky and resourceful they can be. At no point do the people in any,
I gotta, Jeff, you gotta lift some examples here.
Well, we'll get to that in spoilers.
Let's get to spoilers.
Yeah, but it frustrates me because the talent involved is big. The effects I think are really, interesting. Oh, I almost forgot. I don't know at what point in the show I should say this. I should have done it earlier. I have to tell you guys the craziest experience about me watching this movie. We can do that later. But I had the craziest experience watching this movie. That has nothing to do with the movie itself. But
is After Dark material? What do you think about that, Jeff?
Maybe. I mean, I think it's...
We won't have time.
Yeah, maybe After Dark material. It is a story that I... it's wild. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Didn't care for it. I know you guys loved it. Dave, take it. Take it away.
I'm stunned, honestly. This is the second
insanity.
Time.
This is insanity.
I'm like, so I'm still recovering from the first thing Jeff said earlier this episode, right? When Jeff blithely dismissed the moral of It Ends in a way that I did not even factually agree with.
Listen, this is a crazy time. We just had somebody like One Night Only on this show. So, you know, we're all
true.
Allowed.
That
all
wasn't allowed. Me. At least I'm not the crazy one in that situation.
Yeah.
I got out of this movie. I'm like, you know, I was like, I think Devinger is gonna love that, and I bet Jeff is gonna as well. You know, that's literally what my reaction was coming out of this theater. I love this movie. I think it is a blast. I think it's basically a throwback to the Amblin style movies of, hey, nuclear family going through some struggles, and maybe they're gonna go through some more struggles and learn a little bit more about each other along the way.
Except so R-rated. So it can be vicious in the way the Amblin movies weren't. Yeah,
I don't think it's R-rated, actually.
I don't think it's R-rated.
Well, it's more vicious.
It is an extremely hard
PG-13. Yes, like, hard PG-13.
It is shocking how... honestly, this movie is an indictment of the MPAA's rating system, right?
This movie should be rated R.
This movie should be rated R. There's so much stuff in this movie.
Is there?
Just in terms of the language alone.
Yes, there is.
Like, language, limbs, blood.
Many people get killed very violently and bloodily in this film, in my opinion. And there's some really upsetting imagery as well in this movie. So, like, in my opinion, it should definitely be a rated R. I was shocked that it wasn't. I was watching it. Like, I don't know if you guys have this experience, but sometimes you go into a movie, you don't know what it's rated. And then you see something and you're like, oh, I guess it's rated R. Right? Yeah. Like, and that's how I felt.
Lanterns. When I watch Lanterns, it's like, oh, wow. Okay. Oh. All the Green Lanterns are dropping F-bombs.
Yeah. So that's how I felt watching this movie. We got into it and I saw some person get their head ripped off by a dinosaur. Yeah. I was like, oh, it's probably rated R. And then I was shocked to find that it wasn't. Anyway. For movies like this to work, you actually have to give a crap about the core family unit. So if that doesn't work for you, I understand why like none of the rest of the movie works for you. But I liked kind of the family dynamics that were built and at play. I thought each of the characters got their own distinct personality. I wouldn't say they each got their own arc, but they each kind of had some characteristics that are worth mentioning.
Yeah.
And I thought that the dinosaur stuff was excellent. For so long, we have suffered under the brutal reign of Colin Trevorrow and his ilk, making these...
Because they're very successful, but they're mostly very bad.
Making these terrible Jurassic Park-based movies. And in my opinion, this is a movie that not only shows you how majestic these creatures can be, but also how terrifying they can be and... how horrifying it is when they actually attack humans. And
remember when Jurassic World set up that dinosaurs were roaming free in the earth and then did nothing with it? With any of that?
I did have that outrageous thought too. I was like, yeah, right, this is what Jurassic World promised it was going to be, and then it never was. But
Go ahead, Jeff.
The other thing that this movie kind of points out is like, what? Why did the entire industry just cede dinosaurs to the Jurassic Park franchise?
Why is like that
you
the
guys
one?
Could, I guess that's you guys the one can just have them. All the dinosaurs.
No one's going to attempt it. No one else is going to attempt it. And I guess maybe the fact that this movie didn't do very well this weekend is a reason why.
Yeah.
But also, you guys are talking about Fallen Kingdom at the very end of Fallen Kingdom.
I like Fallen Kingdom.
The second Jurassic World movie. It's like, guess what, guys? The next movie going to be dinosaurs in the real world. Literally, they do nothing with that premise.
Yeah. Well, it literally is the end of that movie is the beginning of this movie. They're standing on a hillside overlooking a suburb and dinosaurs are in it. Yeah. It's like, you know, that's like somebody made the movie that movie promised.
That's right. And in my opinion, they did a great job. Also, you got to admire a movie that is 90 minutes and knows how to get in and out and do its job and it's done. Yeah. And doesn't need to be a 2.5 hour long movie and introduce other strains of the cinematic universe that it's working.
It makes you care. It has stakes. It has compelling characters in a tight 90 minutes.
Yeah. The visual effects are super well done, in my opinion. Anne Hathaway is the standout of this film. I think she is holding this whole family together with her metaphorical bare hands. And I thought she did a wonderful job. So many things to love about this movie. I had a great time and would recommend it. All right, let's talk about spoilers for the end of Oak Street starting right now.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
All right, Jeff.
I mean, I just want to say...
No, you guys can start. Be positive.
I was struck by how smart this movie was early on, because like right after the transport happens, the parents go out and be like, oh, something weird is happening. There are freaking dinosaurs out there. They all get back home, right? And they immediately be like, okay, what do we have to do? Nail up the board. Like, nail up the doors, nail up the windows. Like, they start stripping floorboards.
And they did a terrible job of that.
Well, they did it. They at least did it. And then they have the conversation to be
Jeff, I didn't know you were such a handyman that was good at ripping up floorboards and nailing them up. Jeff, my bad.
That's the first thing they do. First thing they do is secure the home. Then Anne Hathaway is like,
literally no effect. A giant snake can just slither on in through the window.
Well, because
no
they
problem.
Opened the window.
But weren't they in a different house at that point?
No, that was their house. That was their house. But they had opened the windows by that point. Yeah. But like they did the thing. It was like, okay. Threat, external threat. What's going on? Let's secure the home. And then like the conflict is happening there where Anne Hathaway's character is telling Ewan McGregor, like, we cannot stay here the whole time. We need resources. We need water. We need food. Like, she is doing the survivalist like handbook of like, okay, we're in a shitty situation, but also we gotta figure out how to survive here. And Ewan McGregor's like, hey, I have hope. I have a vague faith in God or something. At the very least, I found that part of the movie smart. But Jeff, to what you're saying, I know what you're going to say. The kids run out after the dog. And that is a very stupid decision, but they're kids. So
every decision is stupid. Okay, so the movie starts with a block party where mm-hmm. these people Lovely are hanging out party. With all their friends yeah. on this in the suburban street with the idyllic life of community and neighborhood. I know we have a next door neighbor that we don't like, but if it's me, yeah, I'm going to protect my family, but I'm also worried about everybody else in my neighborhood that I like. You know, it fundamentally bothered me that these people do not care about anybody else. And you don't even have to like risk your life for them. Maybe mention that there's other people in your neighborhood that you were literally just at a block party with. Like, don't establish that we're all like members of this vibrant community if we the rest of the movie just completely ignores those people. Again, that's a minor quibble compared to like what comes later. But
I'm reading it charitably, it's a statement about how people retreat into their own worlds when danger arises.
Yeah, yeah, but also literally,
you're doing a lot of heavy lifting on that.
There's a lot of danger there. Light lifting is how I describe it. Yeah. Anyway, Jeff, go ahead. What else do you have wrong?
I mean, even before that, we get a giant, like inhuman mound of feces in the neighbor's yard, and they're just giggling. Like, if that happened in real life, you would be like, what fucking, assuming a person did it, like, who would, where did they even get this much shit? How did they do this? Like, you would be disturbed on a fundamental level that much poop was put on someone's lawn. You wouldn't just be like, oh, my kids didn't do it.
It's like, yeah, Jeff.
I can't believe this is wrong.
What is happening here? Like,
have you seen Back to the Future?
I'm trying to point out that from the word go, no one is smart. No one thinks.
This is the 80s. They didn't have the internet. They barely had encyclopedias.
Are you
to look
kidding
things
me?
Up. Like, she had to go to the library.
A mountain of poop on your neighbor's lawn. A mountain of it.
And that
you wouldn't go,
for you.
There's something really wrong here. There's like, what kind of, what are the logistics of how that would even be accomplished?
Okay.
Honestly, think for half a second about anything.
I thought people in the movie reacted relatively realistically to that
they
situation.
They laughed that's at my, it because it is inherently funny.
That's my
interpretation. Yeah, and PJ Byrne is very good as the asshole neighbor. Gotta say.
Oh, except
PJ
that he
Byrne
stands on
here.
His roof shooting at them like a dummy.
He's
like,
not a smart guy.
No one is smart in this movie. No one.
Jeff, you just keep saying that, but you're discounting. Like,
I just said it.
Securing the home is smart. Securing the home, be like,
they
okay,
don't do
what
a
do
good
do
job
next?
Of it. They don't
Jeff,
do it.
They immediately, they have to rip open the boards because the kids make a dumb decision. But inherently, where they are at the beginning is a safe home. That seems like that's the smartest thing you can do at the time, right? That's all they have. And good luckily, like Anne Hathaway's character has gun skills. Like, she finds a shotgun early on, where we have the time to like mourn the loss of the one older lady she was a friend
Their with. Decision yeah. is we're going to hole up in our house and wait this out. I just think,
what else are you going
to
do?
I think you would try to contact other people in your neighborhood that you're familiar with and try to figure out how we could form a plan. Like, what are other people doing?
Jeff,
are you just letting everybody else die?
They encountered, before they even see the dinosaurs, they encountered somebody brutally murdered my elderly friend. That's bad. Shotgun nearby. Very Resident Evil moment, by the way. Like, shotgun and shells. That's very lucky.
I think it's more of a rifle.
And then the photo of her having been a marksman in her youth. Oh, that's, I love that.
Jeff, like, literally.
So you're angry when it explains it, but then you're also angry when it doesn't explain
it. The giving you the stuff. You can't be angry at little everything the movie is saying. But
it's the
anyway.
Laziest way to explain it. Honestly, wow. I was rooting for this movie for so long. As I said in my initial remarks, I retroactively hated this movie.
Right.
Because
after
of,
what's the moment? What's the moment for you?
What's the moment?
When
the kid?
Fucking dog comes out and saves the day.
Mm-hmm.
I was
not,
I literally
not the kid running after the dog.
Loud.
Not the kid ruining the safe house to go after the dog, which they most likely cannot save.
Which
but
was
the dog
was,
coming out the
again.
End. Yeah.
Not only does the kid do that, which like, okay, you know what, movie? I will buy that this kid loves the dog so much he needs mm-hmm. to go out and save it. Okay. He's not going to tell anybody? He's not going to say anything to anyone. He's just going to go. Like, okay,
his
whatever.
Parents were arguing, Jeff.
Oh, like, his parents were arguing.
Have you ever interrupted your parents arguing before? It's not pleasant. I'm being serious. There's a movie explanation for why he doesn't say this.
They're hearing
parents,
their parents.
I'm going
like
out to find the dog. Like his parents are shouting.
I'm
at
going
each other.
Out.
It's an unpleasant household.
Okay. Okay. All right. I hated the end of this movie is such a cop out. The one thing that happens that's interesting is you kill off Ewan McGregor.
Right.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, movie. Thank you. You've done something bold and interesting and compelling. Yes. Nah, let's undo that in the most convenient way possible. Like the two moments that I loved in this movie are we kill Ewan McGregor.
Yes.
Like, yeah, this feels
genuine
like,
shock.
Genuine shock. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, movie, do it. Go there. Now a new dynamic. Anne Hathaway has to be a parent in a completely different way and like, oh, wow, that's so cool. I'm with you, movie. Yes. And then the other moment that I loved is the kid just eating shit off the roof. Just trying to time it right. Like clearly this takes place in the 80s before kids were really playing video games. Because if that kid had been playing a lot of video games, you're not missing that timing.
If you play Super Mario Brothers, you know you're not going to miss that.
No, I feel like the timing was a little off. The timing was a little, the kid called hacks there, right? Because it's like, it was like a half second off.
You have to jump to where the time portal is going to be. You can't jump in advance of it, you know?
Right. Exactly. You leap when it's off.
Right.
And then it comes on as you arrive.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
We all know that because we play video games.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, but I loved him eating shit on the tree and falling.
Yeah, that was a great moment.
I mean, then immediately after that, what saves the day? Oh, the dog. The dog comes to save the day. And I was like, fuck you, movie. Fuck you forever. And then the movie just undoes everything interesting. I was when they actually leap through the portal, which by the way, I mean, you're desperate, but you're just going to leap through a portal? It's just,
what else are you going to do, Jeff? They're trapped there.
Literally any other ideas. There's no thinking about it. There's no talking to other people. There's no formulating a plan. It's fuck everybody. And again, even at the end, it's fuck everybody. She's going to phone some of her friends and let everybody else die. It's like,
it seems like she had concern for her friends there. You thought she didn't. She saved her entire neighborhood and friends.
She just give us a speech about how nobody's going to believe me when I call them. And then end of the movie is like, no, there's something about her voice that made me want to pack up all my things and leave my house. It's like, oh, fuck off, movie. And when they find, when
Jeff,
they
what happened to you at the screening? What happened to you? Did somebody step on your toe repeatedly?
When they leap into the thing and then land in the pool, I was like, okay. This movie has a chance to do something really interesting. What time period are they going to land in? What if they land in 2026? How cool would that be? From 1982 to 2020? What if the cool thing? Or could be any time period. Like, what? This is on. No, it's the 15 minutes before the bad thing happened. Fuck off, movie. Fuck off. Oh, we can go save Dad now. Oh, fuck you. It's the most cop out, like toothless version of what could have happened. Like you've gone there. You've made us mourn the loss of Ewan McGregor, this character we liked and that their marriage was kind of coming back together. And you took that away from us. That's interesting. That's compelling. I'm with your characters now. And just to undo that in the laziest, most cop-outy way. I think all the rest of this movie too. Fuck the fact that I even cared at any point of this movie because this movie doesn't care.
Fuck everything I did today. Fuck
that's right. That's right.
I think you're missing early. So I think the most troubling part of this ending, by the way, is that they say, okay, they call, save Ewan McGregor. He hasn't, his family, his exact, that version of Ewan McGregor's family is still there.
That's right.
That gets transported back to Dino time. So he will have to reckon with this is not his family. This is another universe of his family.
He doesn't have the memories of patching things up with Anne Hathaway. So like
he doesn't have those.
But also in his mind, their marriage is still deeply troubled.
I love that at the end though, we get like the logical conclusion. There are two Jeanettes.
There's two Jeanettes. So they save Jeanette's family.
Yeah.
But she's like, Anne Hathaway's like, you know, screw my counterpart.
The rest of my family.
But let's save Jeanette's other people, you know, like.
Well, no, Jeanette ran to save her family herself. So she ran off.
Fair enough.
Right. Like that was the whole point.
Yeah, there. I guess that would make sense.
That would make sense. So, but yeah. Like, I love how it doesn't even really comment on that. It's just like, hey, there are two Jeanettes now.
Yeah, there's two Jeanettes now. Fun.
And also, we don't think about the fact that he's essentially abandoned the rest of his family.
Okay.
It's fun stuff.
Jeff, I mean, I'm just like.
I'll just say this.
Here's some things I like about the film. It's like a sequence. It's like an endless mm-hmm. series of set pieces, basically, mm-hmm. with dinosaurs in really creative ways. Like the gigantic snake thing crawling into the house. Like, oh my,
I love
so
the
well
thing.
Done. Like the way it's shot and framed with the snake just barely in the background.
I love that we see the snake early on too. Like we see the snake, they set up the snake and he has like this dopey dumb face. Like how could he be scared of this thing?
Right.
And I love that whole sequence where it's just
people freaking cackling in the theater, you know?
One arrow makes the snake freak out, but her repeatedly stabbing it doesn't seem to do anything.
No, like, that makes him escape.
It does make him escape. Leave.
That's why
he doesn't actually kill anyone. So I think it does do something.
We're going to say what we like, and Jeff will say what he doesn't like about that.
That's what's going to happen.
Other thing that's worth pointing out is like Anne Hathaway is incredible in this movie. Like, incredible. The moment where they discover the basement is flooded and she just lets out this quiet, damn it. And that's like, you could feel all her hopes and dreams and everything being lost in that moment. And her kid's like, daughter's like, what's up? And she can't even quite convey what's happening. Right. Like, she has to be a good parent to be like, oh, I had something down there. And like, you can't convey.
Wonderful
what this movie
moment.
Is really about, by the way, Wonderful is about moment. Being a parent, trying to keep your family together when the world is falling apart around you. Like, I think that's the real relatable thing here. Like, everything is going wrong. And all you can really do is be like, okay, I guess we got to hunker down and try to keep this family together. And I found that to be that energy, that vibe. Like, yes, it's unfortunate they can't be thinking about like how to save everybody immediately as like they're still adjusting to the crisis around them. But that's, you can't do anything else, right? This is pre-internet. They don't have working phones. Like, there's not much they can do other than eventually start to go explore the neighborhood and see what's up. But I found that to be really compelling. The family dynamic here is so good. The kids are great. Like the son who apparently caused another kid to get his arm broken has like a little moment to have like his 80s, you know, teenage boy moment of like looking at this new girl across the street and hanging out with his friends. Like, I love that we get all this set up. The family really
made it work
for me. That
kid was really self-aware. His bully was really self-aware. He's like, starts wailing on him and he's like, I don't even know what I'm doing.
Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this?
So dumb.
I don't know. It seems like people responding to, like, I don't know what I'm doing, right? This is all I can do in response to crisis. But you know what? Not everybody acted the way Jeff wanted to, so.
Sorry.
So therefore the movie's better. Therefore,
tell me, you guys liked the fact that Ewan McGregor comes back?
It's not, it doesn't kill the movie for me. But yeah.
I mean, here's what I would say about it is it's definitely ethically very, and storytelling wise, like very complicated because it's like, well, that Ewan McGregor mm-hmm. doesn't have the same memories. And so fundamentally, in some way, he's not the same person as the person that you left behind. What does it mean to try to resume a family life with that person, right? Like, it's very complicated and weird. Having said that, what this movie offers is, hey, what if you lost someone in extremely tragic, unexpected circumstances, mm-hmm. and then you were suddenly given an opportunity to make that right in some way, to like to see them again and to make that right again. And that's what that ending is about for me. Now, you can say that is unearned if you want. I don't think it's particularly unearned. I think like most of the mechanics for that to happen have been set up in the film and have been communicated to you. And you know, it doesn't really super makes it, it's one of those time travel movies, I guess, where they're creating a new reality. Who cares? You know?
Yeah.
But in my opinion, like that's what that was about. It's like, oh wow, what a lovely moment that this horrible tragedy when like they had just started to start connecting again. Mm-hmm. And then it was like brutally cut short. Like, what if you had the opportunity to like undo that? To like
that whole scene, by the way, is great. Ewan McGregor versus Tyrannosaurus Rex with a baseball bat knocks down
sledgehammer,
but knocks him down. Here's the thing: a warning for everybody. Right, you knock down your gigantic opponent, keep going. keep wailing, keep smashing, because they're probably going to get back up.
Never hesitate. But anyway, so Jeff, that was my thing. I was more like, hey, this is a movie that is trying to offer some fairly simple pleasures, in my opinion, right? It's, hey, there's a scary dinosaur and the people barely escape. And there's another scary dinosaur and the people barely escape. And there's another scary dinosaur and the people barely escape. And by the way, oh, this really sad thing happened, but what if we could make that better again?
Yeah.
That's
and what
the
if their lives are better? She's rich at the end.
Movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's not trying to change the world. It's not trying to be like super profound. It's just like, hey, here's some cool shit. And it's 90 minutes long and we're done. Mm-hmm.
They're happy and successful at the end because they have a nice big house and she has a fulfilling book career, it seems. Yeah.
Like if you guys had, if there was a wormhole that brought the Jurassic period here, would you assume that leaping through it would bring you also here?
If you have a basic understanding, I would assume
that that's a better option than staying here and waiting to die.
The daughter has a basic understanding of the idea of wormholes. And she's like, maybe?
If
maybe
the wormhole is a link between here to the Jurassic period, wouldn't it be worthwhile to bring up the fact that maybe we land in the Jurassic period? If that brought it here, if we jumped in, maybe we end there. No?
I mean,
it would lead us 15 minutes before obviously the bus stop that we land at has a giant clock on it. Cause that's how bus stops are made in the 80s.
Yeah, they did. They do have, I remember bus stops. They did have clocks.
I guess the thing that I'm most surprised by is like, you're describing a level of certainty the characters have that I just don't recognize in the film.
They have certainty. They know that this is what to do. That's the thing that's a problem to me, is that at no point do they attempt to discern more information, contact other people in their neighborhood, form any kind of strength in numbers or community, or
they didn't
figure
have
out
any
what
chance.
Other people's like, plans are.
They like, didn't have a chance to, though, Jeff. Like, they talked about that.
They sat in their house for an hour.
We have to go find other survivors, and then bad stuff happens and they start fighting and the kid runs out. Like, it's a response to constant threats. Like, they're responding to the threats around them. They didn't even have time to sit down and plan with everybody, but they at least helped one survivor. So that's something.
I'm glad you guys liked it. I'm really glad you guys liked it. I wanted to like it. I was having fun for the first little while. And I just don't think this movie respected me as a viewer at all.
Well, at the end of the day, despite what Jeff Cannata thinks, in my opinion, it's pretty impressive that David Robert Mitchell made a movie. And I hope he gets to make many more. It follows part two. Hopefully
they follow
coming out soon.
They follow is coming. He has a Jim Carrey movie in the works, it seems. So that's kind of interesting.
Exciting
stuff for him. Yeah.
That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Filmcast. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McEwen from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode. Video assistance provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, again, Penn and Teller Get Killed, going to be our Patreon review. And on the main episode, going to be Tony. Matt Johnson out with two movies this year.
Wow.
Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, and also Tony. I have to assume two very different films, but
pretty much exactly the same.
And we're looking forward to discussing it right here on The Filmcast. Until then, they are Devendra Hardawar and Jeff Cannata. I'm David Chen. You've been listening to The Filmcast, and we'll see you later. Goodbye.
All right, I want to tell you guys a story of me actually seeing the end of Oak Street, which is very bizarre for me, this experience. So it's, you know, August. It was 85, 90 degrees at my house. I needed to see the movie. So the only showtime that worked was like a 3 p.m. showing in the middle of the day. I get in the car. I drive to the movie theater, you know, a beautiful, sunshiny, 85 degree day, go into this hour and a half movie, come out in Colorado, open the door, walk out of the movie theater, headed back to my car. Oh, looks like it rained while I was in there. That's not super uncommon in Colorado. It rained. I get in my car. I start driving back to my house. Not a long drive, but there are. It looks like the something major has happened. There are the streets are
is
covered.
There raccoon urine anywhere? No, I'm just kidding.
No. the streets are covered in green, like mounds of leaves. Covered,
like a big storm
like a
went
carpet
through.
Of green on the streets, and on the sides there's mounds of what looks like snow. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what the hell happened? Everything's trees are broken and falling in the road. There's like it looks like craziness. I'm driving all the way back. All the roads are covered in green leaves. There's ice everywhere. I get back. All the trees are broken. They're all barren of leaves. I get back. My wife's like, you're not going to believe what happened. We had the craziest hailstorm, 9 inches of hail that started after the movie started and ended before the movie ended.
Wow.
The movie is about this thing happening in this suburban street. So then right as I get home, the hail has hit asphalt that has been heated by August summer and starts steaming. And so there's mist on all the roads everywhere. There's a fog.
I love that.
Over all of this green carpeted. It looks, dude, is the most surreal experience of watching a movie where people are transported in a suburb back to the Jurassic period. I get out of the movie and it looks like that has happened in real life.
Yeah.
It's the craziest experience. It's like.
And Jeff, did you immediately barricade yourself in your house with the highest quality plywood that you could find?
I did the smart thing.
Smartly.
Yeah. No, I armed my son with a bow and arrow and I told him to go find the dog.
This happened to me when I saw Land of the Dead, the Romero movie. But but when I came out, it was like an apocalyptic storm had just hit the entire town. It's a cool thing. It's very.
You know, I also had
40X.
Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
So this weather event would have been crazy at any time, but the fact that it synced up so perfectly with how the events of the movie, where it's like everything's green and lush and weird, and there's like a mist. It was like a one-to-one, like the most viral marketing for the end of Oak Street ever.
Was it better than the dog podcast? The AI dog podcast?
Well, no, not better than that.
I also had a very strange experience watching End of Oak Street. I got out of the movie, which was this Amblin style throwback to the 80s, kids on bikes, really high quality visual effects dinosaurs. And I thought that my co-host, who loves things, and is raised in that era, would go gaga for this.
I knew you guys were going to appreciate my story. It was very well. I'll send you the videos. It's nuts. It's hard for me to express how absolutely surreal it is to go into the dark when it's bright, sunshiny day and come out and there's fog and green and all the trees are broken. It looks like you've been transported to another time.
Yeah.
Exactly what I just watched happen in the movie.
Yeah.
Surreal.